Chapter 4. With the shuttle safely back aboard the Scarabeus, the crew and their five passengers disembarked into the main hold. Pike shepherded them over to the cargo lift, which served the high storage racks and allowed quick access to the gantry in the upper corridor. He explained to the wounded toolbearer Hecek that he would have one of his crew steer his wheeled cradle to the sick bay, while Dervla showed Gabrozen Mav and his followers to their quarters. But when Hecek relayed this to Gabrozen Mav, the bearded humanoid glared and gave a sharp shake of the head before responding with a few terse words. Hecek nodded and smiled up at Pike.
"Captain, our leader insists, respectfully, that he and his subords stay by my side while I receive treatment."
Pike met Gabrozen Mav's gaze and saw no give in it.
"I see. Respectfully, you see."
He gave bland smile number one.
"Not a problem. In fact, I'll personally guide all of you to the sick bay and oversee its operations."
As Pike directed the wounded toolbearer and the stern Gabrozen Mav onto the open platform lift, he glanced at Dervla, who was standing between the hold sliding doors. He gave a half shrug, she gave a weary nod, and stepped out into the corridor, letting the doors close behind her. A few minutes later, they reached the lateral corridor leading to the sick bay. At this point, toolbearer Hecek spoke directly to Branham Pike.
"Captain, before I undergo the machine healing, I should take precautions in the event that I do not survive its touch."
"If I can assist in any way, just say the word," Pike said. "But the Autodoc here is a smart device, and the ship's artificial intelligence lends its extensive faculties as required."
The diminutive humanoid suddenly looked anxious.
"There is a machine mind controlling this vessel?"
His wide eyes darted to and fro.
"Are you then its servants?"
"No, no," he said. "The ship's mind is our assistant and is under my control as captain."
As he was explaining, Hecek was relaying this to his companions, who suddenly looked even more tense and on edge than before.
"The machine mind obeys your commands," said Hecek.
"Indeed, yes," Pike said. "I can demonstrate. Scar, what is our general status? Where we are, any ships in the vicinity, that sort of thing."
"The Scarabeus is still maintaining orbit over the replacement Nadisha 2, Bran," said the ship AI. "Sensors report no other vessels within the system. Analysis of the core ship drive emissions has narrowed possible pursuit courses to less than 500...
"Thanks, Scar. Is the Autodoc ready to diagnose our guest's condition?"
By now, they had reached the sick bay. The open sliding doors revealed a cramped semicircular room with an examination table jutting at the centre and treatment recesses to either side. A curved rack of articulated surgical effectors hung over the central table, interspersed with extendable sensors. Lighting was bright and diffuse, certainly brighter than out in the corridor where Gabrozen Mav's followers had to stand due to the lack of elbow room.
"The Autodoc is fully apprised of our guest's non-human nature, Bran. Field and sonic pain relief will be employed rather than biochemical methods."
Pike looked at Hecek.
"So how does that suit you?"
"It appears satisfactory, Captain," said the toolbearer. "But before I submit to this device, it may be wise for me to give you the location of the world where Khor has gone. Do you have star charts that I may consult?"
"Shouldn't be a problem," Pike said. "Scar, can you retask a sick bay holomonitor to show the stars of the local area?"
"Yes, Bran."
A section of the curved wall next to the head of the examination table slid open, revealing a dark recess studded with hollow field emitters. A touchboard protruded below it, an array of glowing, multicoloured symbols. The emitters glimmered with pinpoint ripples for a moment before a 3D star map appeared, each star a glinting mote enclosed in a small opaque sphere. When the view zoomed in closer to one of them, running text strings appeared and revealed that this was a representation of the Nadisha system. The toolbearer's cradle was wheeled round to bring him closer to the display. Pike glanced at the small being's grotesque hands with their cyborg finger tools, started to explain the view shift controls, then offered to direct it for him. Hetchek smiled.
Captain, I think I understand.
He raised one baggy-sleeved arm with its protruding group of enigmatic probes and instruments. Two articulated digits unfolded weirdly into clusters of shiny tendrils that spread across the touchboard. The hollow display flickered, switched abruptly through 90 degrees and back.
You're sure I can't help you out there?
A slight recalibration problem, Captain. All is well.
The holomap returned for a moment to its original setup before zooming out, a sudden shrinking of the surrounding stars into a denser cloud of points. The border between Earth's sphere and the Indrama Solidarity became visible, a pearly, irregular veil that wove and curved and angled between clusters and tresses of suns. Then the map view zoomed in again. A headlong plummet past dozens of star systems, arrowing straight in on one in Indrama space, some 9 light years from the border. The map view changed to a stylized sun and planets graphic, showing 4 worlds. The second from the sun bore a handful of bright blue surface dots and a fan of radial data tags.
That is the world where Khor is,
Hetchek said.
It is sparsely populated, and apart from a scattering of unmechanized farms, it is unexploited. There are many mountain ranges rich in metal ores, as well as easily accessible fields of liquid hydrocarbons, a prize of great value to the Shuskar. I have used the marker function to show the course that you should take.
The map view returned to the zoomed-out state, which now showed a pale yellow dotted line leading from Nadisha to the system Hetchek had tracked down. The toolbearer's arm slipped off the touchboard and lay still across his chest. He looked weary and unwell, but Pike had to know a few things.
Hetchek, soon as we get you on the autodoc table, the medical systems will look you over and figure out how to heal you up.
He leaned in a little closer.
But you've told me precious little about yourselves, where you're from, what your connection is with Khor, how you came to be down on that poisoned planet, and why you're helping us.
Before Hetchek could answer, Gabrozen Mav spoke to the toolbearer in a peremptory tone, his gaze never leaving Pike. The toolbearer replied in a calming voice which served to mollify the bearded leader.
Gabrozen Mav felt that you were pressuring me,
Hetchek said.
But I have told him that we need to be trusting with those who have helped us. So, briefly, Captain, here are your answers. We 5 were former crew members of an immense and ancient vessel called the Kazurda. Its contracted task is to steal worlds for a brutal empire far from this part of the galaxy. And Khor is one of the deep-range scouts who search for suitable worlds. If he was trading with you, it must have been on the orders of a superior.
Bringing a trashed planet all this way to swap for its replacement seems like a lot of wasted effort to me, Pike said.
A peculiarity of the Kazurdra's employer's demands.
And who's the Shuskar? Is that your captain?
Hetchek gave a bleak smile.
The Shuskar are the lords of Kazurda. An arrogant, pitiless species. We managed to escape Kazurdra, hiding on that broken world until you found us.
and we are helping you by way of repayment."
The reclining sentient fell silent, his face drawn and wan. Pike felt a twinge of guilt, knowing that treatment had to commence. With Hetchek translating directions, Pike and Gabrozen Mav gingerly lifted the toolbearer up onto the examination table. The table self-adjusted, raising his upper torso to a semi-seated angle. Smiling again, Hetchek murmured to Gabrozen Mav and extended a sleeve-swathed arm. A brassy tube telescoped out and dropped a cluster of red, glittering objects into the bearded man's waiting palm. He nodded and transferred them to a ragged pocket in his ragged jerkin, then gave Pike a stony glance.
"What are those?" Pike said.
"Survival teachers,"
Hetchek said.
"To help these brave Shengak if I do not survive."
He closed his eyes, then opened one to look at Pike.
"I mean no disrespect, Captain. Life has taught us that the Gatherer is always waiting for us to make that fatal step or decision. So we always try to be prepared."
He paused.
"Should I disrobe to permit access to my wound?"
"No need, Toolbearer," Pike said. "The Autodoc can manage very well. Are you ready now?"
"I am. Please proceed."
Pike nodded. "Scar, time to fire up the diagnostics."
"Yes, Bran. Preliminary scans indicate that the subject has undergone extensive cyborg augmentation in the form of skeletal recoring, load-bearing substructures, and several implants that function like small-scale biofabricators. Initial diagnostic scan running. Scan reveals an entry wound above the right hip, angling down through soft tissues. A projectile is lodged between a bony spur and an unknown organ. Heart field instrumentality will allow the projectile's removal and realignment bonding of broken tissues, as well as sealing the entry wound."
"And how soon can our guest be up and about afterwards?"
"Mobility is permissible after 4 or 5 hours, Bran. But I would recommend twice that period. Certainly, no strenuous activity should be undertaken."
"And how about that world he found on the holomap? Got any data on it?"
"Yes, Bran. It leads to an Indrama world called Tijimos, whose system is set apart from busy transport routes and hubs. Population is less than 40,000, mostly Bargalil, and the economy is wholly agrarian. Estimated journey time, 4 hours, 45 minutes.
Pike nodded as he gazed down at Toolbearer Hetchek, who now lay still, eyes closed, breathing a quiet and steady sound. The Autodoc's hardfield effectors were already at work, pale blue rods angling down from above, peeling back layers of heavy woven cloth to reveal the injury. At the same time, extruded emitters projected a number of amber beams onto Hetchek's forehead and neck, maintaining sedation and pain negation. There was some movement from the sickbay entrance, where Gabrozen Mav and the other three had assumed guard positions. What had Hetchek called them? The Brave Shengak? Pike couldn't know if that was their species name, or their rank, or whatever. But their mistrust was palpable, a background constant. Gabrozen Mav muttered to the others, handed out the small red objects he had got from the toolbearer, and they all swallowed them at once. The bearded leader then crossed his arms, leaned against the sickbay wall, and went back to watching Pike's every move. Pike smiled.
"Well, lads, let me tell you, this has been a blast! And as much as I want to hang around for more of your tall tales and hilarious jokes, I must tear myself away and get back to running the ship. But I'll have one of the crew check in on you every now and then. All right? Excellent."
Gabrozen Mav frowned as Pike went to the door and stepped out into the corridor. Glancing back, he saw the Shengak leader point at Pike with a jabbing motion.
"Oh, okay.
Pike paused in mid-step.
Okay, he echoed.
Gabrosan and Mav gave a sharp, grunting nod, as if satisfied at something, and went back to his spot at the wall.
Hetchek called those red gem things survival teachers, Pike thought as he hurried away. Are they teaching them our language?
Better let the others know.
Scar, he said,
set course for that Indramar world which our guest found. What's it called again?
Tijimos, Bran.
That's it. And depart orbit as soon as you like. I'm on my way to my quarters to change out of these raggies. Then I'll be on the bridge if anyone needs me.
Less than 10 minutes later, he walked onto the bridge and found nearly everyone waiting for him. At once a barrage of questions, framed in a variety of tempers, engulfed him, although he noticed that Dervla made her comments in a level, near-formal manner. Clearly, they'd picked up some details from the suitcam feeds during the planetside foray, but explanations were needed, especially in the light of Scar's announcement of the break from orbit a few moments ago. Pike filled in the gaps with a condensed version of Toolbearer Hetchek's own story and the news of Khor's whereabouts.
We're in hyperspace, said Wim Foskell. So the hunt must be on.
It most certainly is, said Pike. Flight time to Tijimos will be about 5 hours, and when we get there, Scar's sensors should be able to pick up the trail of Khor's ship and track him to wherever he's holed up.
Ansel seemed unconvinced.
I have to say, Chief, I'm not exactly keen on crossing the Indramar border. It's not the Indramans that worry me. It's the Earthers. Going by Tiernet Scuttlebutt, their intercepts have been getting sharp and fast in the last few months.
Thought about that, Pike said. Once we conclude our business with Khor, we'll head into the Jatsil Ilkosov and scout around for a legit milk run job heading into Earthsphere space. That lets us slip back in. No mess, no stress.
There were nods of approval at this, and Pike felt a little knot of warmth on seeing Dervla's endorsement smile, which was several notches below the dazzle of her admiration smile, but you can't have everything. Just then, she spoke up from where she lounged, next to the command console.
Bran, Mojag is following all this from engineering, and has a question for you.
Sure, Mojag, what's your point?
The grey-haired tech expert appeared in a couple of displays on the bridge, and Pike tried not to think about the dead but digitised Oleg that Mojag was carrying in his cranial prosthesis.
Captain, I'm curious to know what we'll be doing with the Toolbearer and his companions.
I thought we'd take them with us to the Kosov. Bound to be someone on Parimel 3 or Canifer Station that they can find a berth with.
Mojag shrugged.
You may be right in that regard.
I'm sure I am, Pike said with a chuckle.
Right. 5 hours. That should be enough time to run diagnostics on the weapon systems, don't you think? Not saying that I'm expecting to run into serious trouble, but we should be prepared.
In case we run into this cronking big planet jacker ship, you mean? Said Wynne, eyebrows arched.
Pike grinned. I got the impression that the planet jacking is done by a pack of smaller ships.
Oh, that's okay then.
There was low laughter at that, with Pike joining in.
Don't forget that we're carrying high-spec stealth gear, he said. If we need to merge into the background, it's there.
So, if that's everything...
We... Haven't mentioned burials for Oleg and Hamari yet, said Ansel.
Pike glanced involuntarily at Dervla, found his gaze locking with hers, and abruptly looked away. On the screens, Mojag appeared unchanged, composed, and relaxed.
But you've got Oleg's ghost in your head, Pike's thought ran. What's it going to say about this notion?
We've... Heard burials before, Captain,
said Krefom the Hankayan, from where he sat on the deck with his back to the command console.
Remember the one we had for the Ruboyek triplets? Well, two of them.
The Ruboyex were a gen-empath trio of Gulkranis, a species of small, wiry bipeds. Pike had hired them as general tech hands and for their clandestine skills, which were considerable. They had lasted over a year until a lethal part of their own past caught up with them on Furlong's world, leaving two of them dead and the third missing a hand. When it came to the burial in interstellar space, the surviving Ruboyex had to be physically restrained to prevent him jumping into the polycrate along with his dead, plastic-wrapped siblings. Once the improvised casket had been sent off into the icy black by the trash ejector, the third Ruboyex calmed down enough for treatment at the sickbay. Not long after that, at his request, he left the Scarabus during a stopover on some world in the Fourth Modinel, which had a small Gulkrani enclave.
Yes, true. We have had the sad duty of consigning less fortunate crew members to the void, Pike said. I'm just wondering if we can come back to this subject after dealing with the crisis at hand.
But Hamadi was a third Kabaist Muslim, said Wynne, and a strict one. They require their dead to be given the last rites within 24 hours of death. Pike nodded, while wanting to shake his head.
Scar, any info on third Kaabaist burial customs, especially anything on burial in space?
I do, Bran. Third Kaabaists are strongly in favour of burial in space since it lacks air, moisture, or bacteria, or carrion creatures to corrupt or consume the body.
Right, that sounds good. Mojag, do you know if Oleg had any preferences as to how he wanted his mortal remains disposed of?
For what felt like a very long moment, Mojag's face stared out of the holodisplays, eyes intensely wide, and Pike began to wonder if there was some kind of argument going on inside that augmented brain. Then Mojag blinked, frowned slightly, gaze darting from side to side. Pike almost felt like praying.
I think I recall Oleg saying something about writing a will, but I've never seen it.
His mouth twitched into a half-smile.
I could sort through his belongings and his files, Captain, but it might take a while.
That wouldn't surprise me in the least, Pike thought.
Right, that's settled then. Oleg's body will have to be stored in one of the stasis cabinets till we conclude our business, and we can hold a ceremony for Hamadi in the main hold in, say, 2.5 hours?
When can you and Scar work up some appropriate words for the ceremony? Brief but respectful.
See what I can do, Captain?
That's what I like to hear. Ansel, nip round to the sick bay and see how our guests are doing. After that, I want to get into the combat system diagnostics.
On my way, sir.
As Ansel and Wynne left the bridge, Dervler came over. But before she could begin, Crefom spoke up.
Captain, I was checking over the lockered weapons before this,
he said in his steady basso voice.
You want I should carry on?
You do that, Cref. Let me know what you find when you're done.
Crefom nodded, got to his large feet, and headed for the other hatch. Watching him leave, Pike noticed that Punjo Bex was sitting at one of the display stations, hunched over something on the console. So Pike beckoned Dervler out into the corridor.
What was Mojag talking about? She said, suddenly anxious. Oleg never made a will.
I have no idea, Pike said.
My best guess is that old Mojag is getting a touch of grief from his passenger, so came up with the will angle to put off having to deal with the real dead body of his real friend.
Dervler clapped one hand over her eyes and brow and shook her head.
This is idiocy. You should have told the others after you found out, because eventually they're going to figure it out.
Her hand fell away.
Have you spoken to him?
You mean, no, not yet. Have you?
I thought I'd let Mojag tell me when Oleg wanted to chat.
Not much of an excuse, Pike said. I thought you were the official second best friend.
And you're the captain. What's your excuse?
Being captain, I'm a busy man.
Shortly, I will have to find out from Ansel what the latest is from sickbay. Then I have to see what Wynn's come up with for Hamadi's ceremony. Then I'll be having a conference with Scar about our tactical options when we reach a destination. Really? She said, regarding him with narrowed eyes. Yes, really. So what I'd like you to do, dearest Dervla, is skip over to engineering and find out from our Mojag if Mr. O feels like a bit of a gab. She sighed. Okay, Bran, I'll do it. Better to find out what he actually wants rather than second-guessing. She gave a desultory wave of her hand and hurried away afterwards. Pike felt a certain satisfaction. Everyone's busy, and the Scarabus is hurtling along on its mission. Then he stepped back inside the bridge and saw Punjo Bex still sitting at the workstation. He was now leaning back, his tall frame scarcely accommodated by the worn couch. His long legs splayed either side of the console. His narrow features were sombre, and his eyes were fixed on the small objects grouped on a flat section of the console. Pike recognised the 9 novices, the figurines that Punjo employed as a focus for weave meditation.
"You're looking a bit anxious there, Punjo," he said. "Don't tell me the future's that bleak."
The tall Egetsi looked round, anxiety turning into a knowing, expectant smile. Pike chuckled.
"I know, I know. The 9 novices aren't for fortune-telling, is, I believe, what you're about to say."
"Quite so, Captain. Each of the novices represents one of the cardinal principles, and it is the intermeshing of Hevlozen and their influences which reveals the explication."
Explication, you say?
Pike leaned against the side of the workstation and stared down at the cluster of tiny statuettes.
"It's a kind of summary of all the interweaving bonds,"
Punjo said.
"For example, I laid the novices out in the hub and wheel formation, all selected blind from the pouch. This formation, however, is full of contradictions. Gust is the hub, which I usually find a little pleasing, since Gust is the serene, skilled one who works hard in the background, a bit like myself, I sometimes think. So as you can see, Gust can form a pure triad with 8 adjacent pairs around the wheel."
"A pure triad?"
"Yes, where the pair on the wheel are adjacent. The hub can also form 8 triads with pairs that are separated by 1 spoke. These are the lesser triads."
Pike held up a hand.
"No offence, Punjo, but I've got a low tolerance for jargon, I'm afraid. I get the general idea of the figures, and you said something about contradictions, so let's take it from there, eh?"
The Egetsi smiled.
"I am not offended, Captain. Well, simply put, Gust has a strengthening or enabling effect on the hub positions, and in this pattern, the most potential belongs to Vrn."
He reached out and laid the tip of 1 long finger on the head of a small, dark figurine.
"Vrn gains with Gust at the hub, but here Vrn is flanked by Kuld and Dr, sometimes known as the Scions of Dusk. Together with Gust, they form a lesser triad, and either of the adjacent pure triads pits Vrn against one or other of the Scions, with Gust's loyalty a matter of debate."
Punjo paused, and they regarded each other for a curious moment, human and Egetsi dumbfoundness on one side, abstruse interpretation on the other.
"So, what do you get out of this?"
Pike said.
"It's not really a story or a morality plea, so you can't get a lesson in morals from it, can you?"
Punjo looked thoughtful as he carefully gathered the little figures back into their pouch.
"It makes me think about the relationships between things. Sometimes people, sometimes things in nature, sometimes ideas or the effects of ideas."
Pike frowned.
"So that could have been me on the wheel with Khor and his thugs on either side,
And was that really you in the middle?
Or Dervla, Captain, Punjo said. Or even the ship's AI, if you look at it in terms of personalities. But we are taught that this is the least accurate use of the Weave Augury.
Maybe it's telling me that Khor is more dangerous than I realize, Pike said. Could be it's wanting me to be very careful. Thanks, Punjo. The Agetzi smiled and inclined his head as Pike patted him on the shoulder and headed for the hatchway.
Well, that'll teach me not to ask about other people's mysticism, he thought. It's like trying to see sheeps in smoke.
He consulted Scar on Ansel's whereabouts, and a few minutes later stepped into sub-storage 4, aft of the main hold entrance. It was a 4x4-meter room lined with safety racking, where sensitive and expensive equipment was kept, along with most of the ammunition which Kref and Ansel were cross-checking against the issue logs. The black racks with their mesh containers were protected by a monomole layer of diamech, which gave it all a glossy sheen. When Pike asked Ansel about his visit to sickbay, he shrugged.
Check the autodoc. All the readings were stable, and the little fellow is still under sedation. One of his friends, the one called Brozen or something, said he was muttering as he slept. I mentioned it to Scar, and he said it was nothing to worry about.
Gebrozen Mav spoke to you, Pike said. Whole sentences, that sort of thing. Ansel shrugged.
Must be those pills you saw them take. I've heard of scripted nanobots that target language centers in the brain with vocab recodes. The words and the grammar are there, but it needs practice to be any use.
Crafty, Pike said. Maybe Toolbearer Hetchek can show us how to cook them up for ourselves. Oh, and it's not long till we say goodbye to Hamadi. Keep an eye on the time, both of you. Leaving the storage compartment, he headed for engineering. But as he drew near the open doorway, he could make out the voices of Mojag and Dervla engaged in a hushed conversation. Was she talking with Mojag's passenger, the digital copy of the dead Oleg? He decided not to risk interrupting the possibly useful chit-chat and retraced his steps to his own quarters, where he spun out the time by flicking through his wardrobe for something suitably somber. In the event, he turned up at the hold in his usual sleeveless black commander's jacket and dark blue trousers and boots, except that he had put on a formal high-collared shirt. The ceremony was stately and quiet, as directed by Wynne Foskell. All the crew were there, apart from Mojag. Hamadi's remains had been wrapped in white polyplas, which they had rolls of, and placed in an old sealable crate once used for storing pipe sections. The crate was loaded into the main trash launcher set into the deck of the shuttle bay and visible through the force field partition. As the crew stood in a silent line, heads bowed, Scar piped into the hold an audio recording of the Salat al-Janazah, the Islamic funeral prayer. The Arabic prayer had several parts, and after the fourth or fifth, something made Pike glance over his shoulder to glimpse Gebrozen Mav looking down from the upper gantry. The bearded man made a sharp sideways motion with his head. Pike nodded gravely, but pointed at the waiting crate, as if to say, be patient. When the final words of the prayer were spoken, leaving a soft sadness in the air, he moved back from the line of crew members and took the cargo riser up the gantry. Gebrozen Mav was waiting out in the passageway.
So, what can I be doing for you? Pike said, not sure what to expect.
Toolbearer Hetchek asks for you. He will speak, and you must listen.
Pike gave him a judicious look.
Well, that was a very fine pill he gave you. If I ask nicely, will he make up one to help me become a great Zero Ball player, do you think?
Gebrozen Mav only gave him a dark and wordless look and strode off as if expecting to be followed. Pike grinned, shrugged, and did so.
Tallbearer Hetchek was sitting up, sipping a cloudy liquid from a tube that snaked up from a squat bottle resting on a low tray before him. The diminutive humanoid, still clad in his rough robes, smiled as Pike entered the sick bay.
"You're looking better, Tallbearer,"
he said, glancing at the examination table's monitor panel.
"Not so close to death's door, at least."
"Yes, Captain. The Gatherer had to leave empty-handed."
"This time," Gabrosin Mav said, "he waits still."
The bearded warrior held Hetchek's gaze for a long, stern moment, which made Pike realize just who was top dog among these strange passengers. Hetchek broke the gaze first, his expression submissive. Gabrosin Mav glanced at Pike, then back at Hetchek.
"Say your words, Tallbearer."
Hetchek nodded, and he moved away.
"Captain," he began, "our destination is another foundling world, another innocent planet singled out to be wrested away by the thieves of the Shuskar. The brute Khor will be on the surface, near one of the four shroud pillars. Your ship's instruments will lead you to the correct one. But the thieves' own vessels have detection devices, so you will have to find a way to get there unseen."
"Ah, we've got that covered," Pike said. "Had some stealth systems installed a couple of years ago, and not long afterwards, a rich and grateful client gave us some mill-grade enhancement, which allowed the Scarabus to be almost invisible, if that's what we need."
"Is your shuttle fitted with these devices?"
"No, only the Scarabus, but she is planet-capable." Pike chuckled. "Not only can she fly in Atmo, she can go right into a planetary sensor matrix, slip past the detection layers, and land soft and quiet as a feather. After that, there's just a matter of chucking down that rip-off gobshite Khor."
"Khor is a veteran of the Shatterground, which makes him a lethal adversary. Be sure of your preparations, Captain, before beginning the hunt."
"Thanks for the advice, Hetchek," said Pike. "I'll pass that on to Wynn and Kref. They'll make sure that we are completely ready."
"They must. Khor is not to be taken lightly."
The Tallbearer closed his eyes and sank back against the inclined backrest, seemingly exhausted. Pike frowned and looked closely at the biomonitor readouts.
"Scar," he said, "what's our patient's prognosis?"
"Quiet rest for several more hours, Bran."
"I thought you said that he would be up and about sooner."
"The patient's energy levels have been more severely suppressed than originally anticipated, Bran. Even this aided recovery period may have to be extended."
"Right, I see."
Hetchek now appeared to be sleeping, while Gabrosin Mav stood nearby, arms crossed, and regarding Pike with apparent distrust. As Pike turned to leave, the bearded warrior cleared his throat and spoke.
"Thank you for your help."
He looked back. The dark gaze now seemed tempered by something like grudging respect.
"Thank you for all you have given us."
"Well, we both benefit from this," Pike said. "Mutual aid, sharing information, a bit of medical treatment, and we're back in the game, eh?"
A wintry smile creased the warrior's mouth.
"Back in the game. Yes, this is so."
Gabrosin Mav said no more, just gazed down at the Tallbearer. Pike nodded, said something about being about his duties, and left sickbay. As he hurried off in the direction of the bridge, he sighed. Embarrassment always stuck home whenever people started being grateful to him, whether he deserved it or not. He was a hard-bitten, border-defying, sanctions-busting smuggler who laughed in the face of boundary police, Gratitude just didn't seem appropriate somehow. When he reached the hatch to the bridge, he took one step over the threshold and froze. Only Ansel and Wynn were there, and they were wrapped in each other's arms. Pike, carefully, soundlessly, retreated, moving back several paces. Then, with a heavy tread, resumed his approach, adding a cough to the performance. When he entered for the second time, Ansel and Wynn were settling into their respective workstation couches.
"Did you get a chance to run those diagnostics?"
Pike said, while dropping into his own chair.
"Mojack was good enough to set them up for me while I was helping Kref,"
Ansel said.
"I've been going over the results, and so far I'm only seeing minor calibration issues. Other than that, the defences are at optimum readiness should we need to kick some ass."
Pike laughed. "And arse-kicking could well be on the menu. Scar, what's our ETA?"
"ETA has been updated, Bran. Due to unexpected hyperspace energy conditions, we shall reach the edge of the target star system in less than 30 minutes.
Pike shrugged. "Sooner we're in, sooner we're out. Have you dug up any more info on the oddly named Tijimos?"
"It is within the average planetary diameter for E-type worlds and has three large landmasses, two of which are spread across the equator. Indrama records stated to be a Class D colonial holding, since current macro policies are focused on upgrading existent industrial base worlds. However, since it lies in the 20-light-year strategic buffer zone, it qualifies as a third-rank tactical asset and was assigned a Guardian station, which is, essentially, a manned outpost capable of deploying interceptors and drones. However, a 5-year-old secret Earth Sphere intel report, which I acquired some time ago, reveals that most third-rank systems instead received an AI drone retasked for monitoring and oversight."
"Which makes it an attractive proposition if you're a gang of planet-jackers looking for some real estate that's desirable and lightly defended."
"Exactly so, Bran. However, we can be sure that the planet-jackers' sensornet will be on high alert."
Dervla entered the bridge during the exchange, and Pike met her gaze as he continued.
"Then we have our stealth systems ready so that we hit the ground running when we come out of hyperspace."
"No problems, Chief,"
said Ansel, as he exchanged a grin and a wink with Wynn.
"We'll be like a shadow in the blackout. And if the worst comes to the worst, we can always throw them a squawker."
"Sounds like just the thing," Pike said.
"What kind of frightener are you thinking of?" "I thought I could configure the emission profile to look like a Lion-class Earth Sphere assault corvette."
Pike laughed. They had a small battery of missiles adapted to serve as decoys, their payloads replaced with multi-band emitters capable of projecting a complex energy signature to match almost any kind of vessel. More than once, a squawker had led pursuing hostiles on a merry chase while the Scarabus had made good its escape.
"I definitely approve," Pike said. "Musical accompaniment?"
"Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries? Or Godfog's Hole in the Universe?"
"Go with the Godfog. Should scare the guts out of him."
After that, Pike went over to the equipment manifest for the mission. The field packs and weaponry needed by himself, Dervla, Krefom, Ansel and Wynn. Then he moved on to the defence diagnostics and saw that Ansel had been as sharp-eyed and thorough as ever, which still left over 10 minutes till the drop from hyperspace. On the holoconsole, he went into the shared crew files, opened the folder where Wynn occasionally left short stories and poems for the others to enjoy, chose something short and began to read. He was halfway through a curious tale about a tree whose fruit were tiny books when Scar announced a 20-second countdown. The all-too-familiar vertigo squeeze came and went, and the Scarabus was back in real space, stealth systems running, masking the ship as it curved away from the exit point on a decelerating trajectory.
"Lots of activity around the planet Tijimos," muttered Wynn. "No sign of any Indraman monitoring post, though."
"Anything on the Jacker ships?"
said Pike. What kind of sensor web are they putting out?
Dervler uttered a low whistle from where she sat. There's a cluster of small ships in surface sync orbit. 5, all told. But there's this bigger one which is enclosed by a strange field of some kind, and it's given off bizarre surges and bursts of energy. She shook her head. Details still hazy. Getting in closer would be better, if certifiably crazy.
Scar, Pike said. Any signs of long-range sensor scans?
Nothing recognizable as such, Bran. But as we reached the D-hyper point, I detected intermittent patterns in the pattern flows near this system.
No way to assess threat levels.
Sorry, Bran. Insufficient data.
Then we do what Dervler suggested. Get in there, close and personal, eh? Set us up for a microjump, aiming for high orbit distance with the planet between us and them. Ansel, better fire up every one of your stealth gambits. We're about to walk in the front door.
The hyperspace microjump went perfectly, taking the Scarabus from 7 million miles away to 15,000 miles above the surface of Tejimos in little more than an extended instant.
Jaka vessel's still holding position,
Ansel said.
No change in ship-to-ship comm traffic. Ha ha! They don't know we're here.
Scar, Pike said. Any more on those hyperspace patterns? And what about the strange field surrounding the big Jacker vessel?
Only that some eddies in the patterns seemed to correspond to the planet. As for that field, it is more a proximity effect shed by some kind of generated force. It appears to be a transboundary conduit carrying a torrent of energy into hyperspace, into Tier 2. There's something vast there.
Chief, they're on to us, said Ansel. Two of those 5 ships have broken orbit and launched several missiles, all heading our way.
Time for a crazy, noisy squawker, I'm thinking.
Ansel laughed, fingers dancing across the touchboard.
Oh, yeah, a squawking, screeching delight, and it's away.
Bran, said the AI Scar, I've picked up drive emissions exactly matching those of Khor's vessel. It is down on the planet's surface.
Pike felt a surge of exhilaration.
Do you have precise coordinates?
Yes.
Then get us down there, he said. Full burn.